This is the Lembit Opik Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembit Opik Show right here on today's News Talk TNT, the home of free speech. And boy, we've got a lot of freedom of thought and expression coming up in the next couple of hours. Shortly, in a few minutes' time, I'll introduce my next guest. That's Jada Franson, who is leader of the British Freedom Party. What is that party, you ask? You'll find out all about it right here. And I shall put all the questions to her that I read about, all the slurs, all their criticisms, and she can say in her own words what she makes of that. My only request to you, dear viewer, as well as to Jade, I don't need to say it to all of you, is please don't swear because children are listening too, but keep your cognitive capabilities going, because the last thing I'm going to do is make you, force you to think what I think, but I want you to have the opinions formed on the basis of fact. And remember, after Jade, we've got Nick Griffin, a debate I've been trying to have for 18 years. Today is the day that we're finally having it, and the first of many, I hope, as well. Before I go to Jada, let me read some of the comments, which have apparently been provoked by the debate I had with my previous guest, Tim Scott from the Freedom Association, about this, what I believe is an insane policy about making it illegal for any 15-year-old today to ever buy cigarettes in this country, even if you're 70, even if you're 100, if you're 15 today in 85 years' time, you're not allowed to go into the corner shop. You have to get your 101-year-old mate to go in and buy them for you. Some comments here. Some of these about other aspects of free speech. Eric says, denounce your troublesome neighbors. This sounds like the Soviet Union in the 1930s. Sadly, it's also not unlike the old Soviet system. Craig Abbas says the police are politicized 100%. They will go after who the government and globalists tell them to. Hermetica, yes, they are basically a campaign group. That's the Freedom Association, but maybe you mean the police. I'll leave that for you to decide. Holly says, because that's where the castles are, Lembit. Fair point. Good point. Well made. Kegabar says the smoking law is more distraction to the real issues. Well, I think so too. Another form of virtue signaling, but a pernicious one, because it actively harms our freedom of thought. Hermetica asks a good question. How can they enforce the smoking ban, unless, of course, they implement digital ID, a problem, once again, looking for a solution. Holly says, what about pipes? I think we should all smoke pipes. That's a good point, Holly. Send me a picture when you've got your pipe. Wee Fat Shug says, you can die for the parasites and war at 16, so all's good. That's right. You can go and get killed in a war on the basis of a false prospectus, but you can't smoke when you're in the trenches, or you can't buy cigarettes when you're in the trenches, or maybe it doesn't count when you're on a foreign mission because you're not technically under British law. I don't know. Holly says, might just fire up a gaspo with my coffee then. This is a thing. A lot of people might just react. Craig Abath says, Lembit, it's all smoke and mirrors, like what you did there. And then Tim, you can't say black market. That's borderline hate speech. I was thinking that. Are you allowed to say black market anymore? Or Holly says, is it a market of color? I'd love when you start exploring these ideas and taking it to reductio ad absurdum, which means reduction to absurdity. Louise S. says, imagine policing this. I feel sorry for staff working in shops selling cigarettes. Imagine asking a 70-year-old for ID. It's incredible. Eric says, got it. It's an economic stimulation. The 18-year-olds paying the 19-year-olds. The black market also, as you mentioned. It's pathetic, isn't it? Says Holly. Triggerbath, my best comments on here are when I'm inebriated. Okay. Or do you just mean angry? I'm not sure. I mean, in the UK, it's just past 11. I'm not judging. I'm not judging. You spend your weekends as you want, my friend. Peter McCabe again says it also expands the age range that people will have to show ID. That's an interesting and rather dark point. A few more. I don't smoke and never have done, says just a bloke. So I've decided to make my very existence an act of rebellion. Hermetica says, so Rishi Sunak's answer to all the country's problems is to study more maths and stop smoking, eh? A few more. Hemingway says we'll soon be banned from wearing jeans because scientists from the Guangdong University of Technology in China have discovered that wearing a pair of jeans just once creates 2.5 kilos of carbon dioxide, the equivalent of driving a petrol car 6.4 miles. Is that true, Hemingway? Or have you just made that up? Chris says mobiles are addictive. Ban them. Very good point. And Holly says, thank you, Tim. Sure, I've met you in a pub in Dorking. I think the public should be told. Keep your calls and comments coming. So many more. You've got to stay for the next couple of hours, because coming up next, we've got a very interesting and very free-speaking person, which is pretty appropriate because she's leader of the British Freedom Party, Jada Franson. All of that with me, Len Bitopic, right here on TNT.
The facts, no spin or agenda.
Not enough with the lies, we need the facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And facts we shall get together with a dose of opinions, but you'll always know the difference. I'm so honoured to welcome my next guest. It's Jada Franson, leader of the British Freedom Party. Welcome to the Len Bitopic Show here on today's News Talk. An honour to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Len. It's nice to be here.
Let's start. Well, first of all, you're regarded as a controversial character. When people always say that, what that tends to mean to me is that people are scared of you and they aren't sure how to argue with the person. So let's start with a brief history of you in terms of your political aspirations. And you've got further. Well, actually, I did become leader of the Welsh Lib Dems, so we have that in common. We're both leaders of parties. What was your journey that got you to lead a party, and why this one?
I was never really into politics, to be completely honest. I actually fell into right-wing politics, because I got involved in activism. And my route into activism was in direct response to the murder of Lee Rigby. And then I kind of dabbled with a few groups. And then, as you know, I spent some time with Britain First, and that ended 5 or 6 years ago now. And I basically realised that there are all of these kind of, I don't like to be lumped into this bracket, but these kind of right-wing groups that are just running a grift and not really providing any solutions and not really speaking out against the issues that are really important. Like, we're just focusing on the distractions. And the British Freedom Party actually didn't start out as a political party at all. So I launched it in direct response to the COVID scandemic. It was almost immediate. I could see what was about to happen. And I had warned people very early on, and actually, in fact, my colleague, who you've got on the show later, Nick Griffin, Nick and I were warning people really early on not to get drawn into this COVID scam, because it wasn't adding up. And I had people that had been supporting me for like 10 years saying, you know, Jada, you're going to kill people with this kind of rhetoric. And I just said, look, calm down, because something's not right about this. Like, this smells like communism to me. So the British Freedom Party actually started out as the British Freedom Movement. And it was an advocacy service, a free advocacy service that I offered to anyone of any race, any political persuasion, anything. Doesn't matter. It could be, you know, left wing, right wing, chicken wing. You could be black, white, or polka dot. But what we saw was that everybody, I was sitting back, and very early on, I saw the police exercising these draconian new powers that they'd been granted by our Lord Protector, Boris Johnson, and they were abusing them. And so I said, listen, I don't care who you are. If you've been unlawfully fined, harassed, come to me and I will represent you for free. And that's how the British Freedom Party started. And then here we are 4 years later, and it's morphed into a party. We are really a resistance group. We're more of a campaign group. We do take part in elections, but only to tell people to reject the system, you know, spoil your ballot paper, and remove yourself from the circus as much as you can.
You get people criticizing you often in ways which I think are, if I was litigious, verging on slander and libel. You're accused of things which infer that, for example, you're a racist. Why do people do this?
Silencing techniques, and they've been very, very effective. I think the first time we really saw hard evidence of how effective, well, certainly in my lifetime, of how effective these silencing techniques are and have been, was when the Rotherham grooming scandal was exposed. And we learnt from the horse's mouth that people had covered this up and refused to report it because they were living in fear of being labelled racist, right? And I really looked at that and thought, wow, this has been like 40 years of suppressing and covering up this heinous racket that still goes on today, because people are scared of a word. And then, of course, if you look at more recent events, we saw exactly the same thing happen to those, me being one of them, anti-vaxxers, right? So suddenly people who just wanted to make a decision about their own body and whether we wanted to allow ourselves to take an experimental medical procedure were being labeled, and it was all by design so that the public would turn against us. And I heard just before you invited me on and before you welcomed me on, you speaking about, you know, the neighbor, the snitching of the neighbors. Do you remember we had Suella Braverman, I think, or Priti, no, it was Priti Patel, encouraging us to snitch on your neighbor. I mean, what kind of, we've already had like community cohesion, especially in mainland UK, has been broken down again by design. But we're now at a point where we're being encouraged to dob in our neighbor for going on an extra walk, getting a bit of fresh air. I mean, so the labels are ongoing. And I think more recently, the labels are morphing. Depending on what the agenda is, the labels change, but they're just silencing tactics.
There was one example where there was a real problem because the neighbor who might have snitched on his neighbor was guilty as well, by which, of course, I mean the Chancellor and Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, who both got done for breaking their own laws. Yeah. The hypocrisy of it, Jada, the double standards were breathtaking. As somebody who I firmly believe is a victim of vaccine injury with the third vaccine, the first two didn't. I took three because I was traveling, had to keep traveling all the time through the lockdown, which was possible with the regulations, but I ended up putting that muck in my body, and the third one really affected me. Just a view on that. I've got so much to ask you about, but just your view on that. What is your conclusion about what they were doing to us? What's your conclusion about the whole vaccine application around the world?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry to hear that, because I really, it angers me. I'm so grateful to God that he made me as stubborn as I am, because there was absolutely no way that I was taking that. And people were saying, you know, well, that's all right for you to say, you know, you work for yourself. I could lose my job. And I had to remind them, listen, I already lost my job because of speaking out. I lost my home. I lost my liberty, all of my assets. So let's not play the whole I've got more than you to lose game. And I'm grateful for that. And this is not in no way, like, I don't take any pleasure out of this, because I genuinely think that everybody who was screaming from the rooftops about our concern surrounding these vaccines weren't doing this out of some sort of, I don't know, superiority complex. Like, this wasn't us pontificating for no reason. We were worried. And here we have, you know, a firsthand account. What do I think they were doing? I think, I don't like to go too far down rabbit holes, because I think sometimes you can destroy the credibility of the entire argument. So look, people were saying this is the mark of the beast. I'm a Christian. I know my Bible inside out. I'm telling you now, this wasn't the mark of the beast. But I do think that it was some kind of, I think the whole thing, the COVID, the whole thing was a bioweapon, really. And I think that these vaccines were being used to as population control. And we don't really have to go too far down the rabbit hole to come to that conclusion, because we've heard the likes of Bill Gates say that he himself, who was developing these vaccines, not necessarily this particular one, but other ones, argue that these will be used for population control. So one doesn't need to delve too far or place on their tinfoil hat to reach that conclusion. But the damage it's done, I don't think we will have any idea until we're maybe another 10 years down the line. But I know many people that have been injured by those vaccines. And I'm so sorry that happened to them, because I think, I know you did it to travel. There were so many people that did it because they believed what they were doing was right. They'd been blackmailed, like, you're going to harm other people. So many people did this for the greater good. And I think it was something very sinister.
Yeah, I did it to travel. I only did it to travel. I didn't believe I needed that rubbish at all, because I got COVID. I had COVID. And through the miracle of evolution, that means my body worked out how to deal with COVID, which I like to call flu, by the way. But there we go. Maybe I'm just underplaying the hand. Maybe bad flu, but flu all the same. After the break, Jada, I want to ask you about some of the people who've overtly made these criticisms and attacks on you, to hear your perspective on them. And we'll be starting with Nicola Sturgeon, who's in a pretty hot water herself. You're listening to Lemba Topic here on today's News Talk TNT. I'm speaking to Jada Franson, who is the leader of the Freedom Party, as we explore free speech test case, if you like, in intolerance, where people, rather than engaging with Jada, as I'm doing here now and welcoming you to this dialogue also, they simply try to shut them down with ad hominem attacks. That means personal attacks against the individual instead of engaging in the dialogue. I'll be back in just a few minutes. This is the Nembutopic Show. It's TNT. See you shortly.
TNT's Pella Neuroth-Taylor.
It'd be interesting that if this is kind of Britain's recent soft power exports, we know that the transgender debate and the Scottish censorship law made shockwaves around the world. Who would have thought that Brexit Britain, this country that was founded in the spirit of liberty and for whom Brexit was supposed to be a relaunch of Britain as a country of liberty, has now seems to be exporting censorious attitudes and laws, because just as the smoking ban in pubs law was exported from the British Isles, Ireland, actually, they very quickly spread to the rest of Europe. This law might spread equally quickly. We don't know. So within 5 years' time, a smoking ban for teenagers and then kept up as they grow older might spread to the whole of Europe. So Europeans, listen up.
Pella Neuroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Plug in.
Website.
TNTradio.live.
Check it out.
Today's News Talk Radio.
It's the coolest.
TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembutopic Show here on today's News Talk TNT, where I'm having, well, I hope you find an enlightening conversation with Jada Franson, who's been accused of being a racist and a fascist by a rather senior member of British politics. We'll come to that in a minute. She's the leader of the Freedom Party. And Jada, you live where I grew up in Northern Ireland. And you probably can't hear my accent so much because you're surrounded by people with much stronger accents. I miss Northern Ireland. What's it like? Is it raining by any chance?
It's always raining. It's always raining. You know, I absolutely love Northern Ireland. And fairly recently, really, in terms of my age, 21, of course, but up until, you know, maybe the last decade, I didn't really have a good handle on Northern Ireland and actually how different it is from where I grew up, which was on the mainland. I grew up in southeast London. And the fantastic thing about Northern Ireland is the community. And in fact, we were speaking about this just a moment ago in the break, but the community that has been stripped away from us by design, again, and on the mainland, so that we all live in this very individualistic, kind of hedonistic society, well, not society, just bubble. And you don't have that in Northern Ireland. It's still the last Christian stronghold of the United Kingdom, which is fantastic. And yeah, I can't speak highly enough of it. I honestly believe that anyone watching that considers themselves to be like a British patriot or a nationalist, let's say, British nationalist, because that has a very different connotation here. Yeah. But it's definitely somewhere that I would encourage people to visit and see how our culture can actually be.
That's right. And having grown up there, I'm sure that's one reason why, two reasons why I'm so politically engaged. One is because my whole family's history was influenced by, well, the Soviet Union, really, in World War II. And secondly, growing up in a very politicized part of the world, which is Northern Ireland. I actually think that it is the most politically astute part of the United Kingdom and possibly of Europe. But let's go to A couple of comments, by the way, just to have to defend myself here. Just a bloke says, how do you know you had COVID, Lembit? Genuine question. You're going to hate the answer, because I had the symptoms and then I went and got a test. I know. Don't say anything about a test. I think it was bad flu. I get it. I know that Seb's now going to start ridiculing me as well, because I was foolish enough to have the jabs. I accept it. I bitterly regret it. Okay. I'm not going to change my message on that one. Bitterly regret having any vaccines at all. My bad. And also, I regret it. I paid the price for it. Right. So let's just carry on with the question I want to ask you here. And I'm just looking for the item. Here it is. Apparently, according to Nicola Sturgeon, right, let me just quote. This is from a left-wing newspaper in the UK. You are a racist. Sturgeon clashes with ex-Britain First Deputy, Scotland's First Minister. Intense confrontation with Jada Franson outside Glasgow polling station. Apparently she called you a fascist and a racist. What was all that about?
She did, but in her defence, I did call her a Marxist first. So she went to the go-to, the resting position of, are you losing an argument? Yes, let's pull out the you're a racist card, and there you go, you've won. It was a funny thing, actually. So there were elections being held in Scotland, and under the banner of the British Freedom Party, myself and my colleague, Jim Dowson, and a few others, we stood. And I stood intentionally in Glasgow Southside, which anybody who knows that constituency, this was Nicola Sturgeon's constituency at the time she was First Minister. Anybody who knows that constituency knows that she's absolutely destroyed it. She's flooded it with immigrants. And those who aren't immigrants are hardline Republicans who despise the British. There's a tiny, tiny enclave of British people, unionists, that are still there. But look, these are the tactics that we use in the British Freedom Party. We go into elections telling people, don't bother voting for us. Don't vote for me. There's no point, because the voting won't change anything, actually. Like, this is sewn up. But we're doing this as a protest. We're doing this to gain awareness. And I said, personally, I'm going to go after this woman, because the damage that she has done to Scotland is unforgivable. And true to my word, there she was outside the polling station. And my colleague and I have been driving around Glasgow playing lots of patriotic British songs. And so I just went up and tried to have a word. And it was quite amusing, because she kind of fled. As she was fleeing, she was hurling these slurs, you're a racist, usual stuff. And she was running straight into a real hardline loyalist area, which I thought this was going to end really badly. I almost felt sorry for her. So I kind of backed off and was like, look, if you go down there, you're in trouble. Like, just stop. But in all seriousness, we do all of this, and we do it quite, it is a bit tongue in cheek, I guess, because it is a kind of a protest thing that we stand in these elections. But the message is very serious. These globalists, the damage that they're doing to the country is just, it's unforgivable, and they don't get held to account enough. So that was my job.
Yeah, I'm sure that you feel sorry for her. I'm sure that your heart goes out to her poor husband, who's just resigned from the Scottish National Party. He's been charged with some kind of embezzlement.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're 100% behind hoping he's going to be found innocent. It's rhetorical.
Heart bleeds. I have to say, one of the most pleasing images I saw, I think it was last year. I'm sure it was last year. It was one of my favourite images of the year. I think it was 2023, was when they had her in the police car and she looked ever so glum. And I thought, I think chickens are roosting now. Let's hope anyway.
One of the things, I haven't really looked it up, but I'm told that at some point you're convicted of an anti-Muslim hate crime. You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to. I'm just curious. What was that?
Several, actually.
Right. Okay.
So there was the first occasion, I think, that I was convicted for was in response to these Sharia patrols that were going on in London. We did like a Christian patrol. I basically just walked through the street. I held a cross, walked through Bury Park, gave out some literature. A Muslim woman came up to me, a white Muslim convert, and I was just screaming abuse. And I got done. She called me I won't say it because there might be children watching, but she called me not a very nice word. Yeah. She called me not a very nice word. And we had an exchange, which wasn't particularly dignified. And they, despite the fact that I had been chased down the street by this individual, they convicted me of religiously aggravated harassment alarm distress. And that was the first time I realised that the legal system was actually just willing to just create a whole scenario that never happened. And then they jailed me in 2018 for leafleting people in Ramsgate to let them know that there were a gang of child rapists. I got jailed for harassing them for 9 months. And then when I got out of that, I was put before the court in Northern Ireland because I gave a speech at an anti-terror rally, just an anti-terror. And they said that because I quoted something from the Quran, it was hate speech and it was hatred against Muslims. Or I didn't write the Quran, just to clarify. I just read the words. They weren't my words. It was actually a particularly hateful verse from the Quran, but it wasn't something I was endorsing. But in any event, I think it just goes to show, and we saw this again. This was why I launched the British Freedom Party or the British Freedom Movement, to represent people. We've seen such an abuse of power by the judicial system, by all of the authorities. The British Freedom Movement, actually, the thing that encouraged me to start that was when a lady was convicted of a crime that didn't exist under the COVID laws. And so this country is like a banana republic, you know? Mm.
Although in some ways there's a dark humor to it, the inference is that quoting the Quran, literally quoting the Quran, can get you imprisoned. What about if you'd been a Muslim? Would the same thing have happened?
You know, I really don't know, because I think actually what we're starting to see, particularly with the Muslims' prayer ban in schools, which I have to say, I'm actually against that decision. I don't believe that prayer should be banned. I think that if kids want to pray in the playground or in, you know, break time, whether they're Christian or Muslim, I don't believe in restricting people's right to pray. I think that let people, you know, what harm are they doing? They could be watching TikTok. So I don't know. But I tell you what the most shocking thing was, Limbit, and I wish actually I had the piece of paper. I still have it, and I would love to show you, because as someone that I know that is, you know, feels so strongly about free speech, you know, when they arrested me, I was living in England and I had these restrictions that made me go and sign at a police station once a week. So they knew where I was at all times. And there was a police officer from Northern Ireland that was kind of hiding at the back. They sent four officers over. They drove me from London to Liverpool, put me on a boat overnight, took me to Belfast. And the charge sheet that they've given me, which I've kept, says that you gave, these were the allegations against me, you gave a speech which was anti-Islamic in nature. And that was the basis for the charge against me. And no matter what people think about Islam, I've made my feelings quite clear about it. This is an absurdity. This is like a blasphemy law that you'd expect in Pakistan. Like, I gave a speech that was anti-Islamic in nature. Okay, so, you know, like, so what else?
I'm very interested in, I studied philosophy of religion, actually. And one of the things I find interesting, we won't go into too much because it may be a bit too of a distraction, but Judaism led to Christianity and Christianity led to Islam. It's all based on the same God. And the prophet Muhammad, who clearly is a historical character, whatever you think his status, he's actually said that Christians and Muslims should respect each other. I'm wondering, and so the question, the reason I ask, would a Muslim have been prosecuted for this? The reason I'm asking that is because I'm wondering the extent to which now you feel that the judiciary itself has either been politicized or biased in some way. Do you think that there are any lessons in terms of access to justice in this country?
Yes, absolutely. I would have said to you, if you had asked me even a couple of years ago whether I think a Muslim would have received the same treatment that I received, I'd say absolutely not. These days, I would say probably 70% no. But I do think that the possibility of Muslims receiving the same treatment is increasing, because we're now seeing a new label, right? So 10 years ago, when I was doing my thing and charging around the country with a cross, which lots of people might have found distasteful, but I was trying to point out that there were issues with immigration, Islamification, globalism, all of that. And we've done all of that now. Everybody's seen it. But at the time, the worst thing that you could possibly label was an Islamophobe. And therefore, it was a subject you couldn't touch. And so absolutely no, back then, if a Muslim quoted the Quran, they wouldn't get in trouble. I would. But now, if we scroll forward 10 years, We're seeing the same thing being applied to Christians, and it's starting to creep in with Muslims, with this anti-Semitism row, which is ironic because they are Semitic people, these, you know, Palestinians that supposedly, if you support them, you're anti-Semitic. So I'm always cautious. I'm always warning people to be cautious, because when you see certain groups celebrating certain things, like the Christians being banned outside abortion clinics, some people are celebrating that. Well, I don't think you should celebrate anyone's freedom to pray in silence. People celebrating the school ban that I mentioned, you know, they will apply that across the board. That means that your children could be watching TikTok videos on how to twerk in their break time, or they could be praying in a prayer group, inoffensive. Be careful what you cheer for. Any restriction on liberty and freedom should not be celebrated. Even if it's your enemy, it shouldn't be celebrated.
I have to confess, and this is an age thing, I understand what the Quran is, but I'm not completely sure what twerking is. Please don't describe it to me. I don't think I want to know. I don't think I want my children to do it. I don't really want to know what it is. It's probably unsavory. In terms of the point you make, and we'll talk about this after the break as well, I'm very interested in the conflation of Israeli politics with anti-Semitism. We'll come back to that after the break. So let's try and stay away from that for now. The question I've got is, you live in a very, very politicized part of the world, the Northern Ireland, where there have been tremendous divisions. But one good thing happened there. I was Shadow Secretary of State for Northern Ireland for 10 years. So I was involved in the peace process from the beginning right through to the end, or at least right through the Good Friday Agreement, right through to its implementation. And what I noticed was that warring groups, people who previously hated each other, actually made a reasonably good job of power sharing. And I've always regarded the Stormont Assembly in many ways to be the most sophisticated regional treatment, much better than Scotland and Wales in terms of how it actually dealt with people, because it's essentially quite a heavily left-leaning situation. If the Republicans and the Loyalists and former terrorists, people who served time for terror acts, were able to run Northern Ireland, why have we drifted so far away from the tolerance of free speech in the UK as a whole?
I think that there isn't any inclination by the political elites to do what's right by anyone other than themselves. And I mean, that includes their own children, because these people, some of them do have future generations who will be directly affected by their actions or their inactivity. And this is all this gross greed that we're witnessing by these elitists that will peddle any agenda that gets them ahead. I've just never seen such a selfish society. it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And they're not even trying to hide it. So unfortunately, I don't think that Northern Ireland is exempt from that propensity for people to chase the shekel, so to speak. I don't think there is a much stronger culture here, and so there isn't this same level of individualism that we have on the mainland. The erosion of that destroys everything. Once you destroy the community, and again, going back to COVID, this was the plan with the COVID thing, the first thing they did, shut down the pubs. Why? Because if there's going to be a rebellion against this tyranny, it will start with men in the pubs. That's how this has always happened, right? Men get together and say, I don't like this. What are we going to do about it? So let's break everyone apart. So it's the community in Northern Ireland that has enabled that to be somewhat of a success. Mainland Britain has had that erosion affect us for a very long time. And it's a sad thing to see, but I don't think anyone's immune to it.
A couple of points here. We're going to go to a break in a moment. Just want to read. Jada, as you mentioned, says Mally Bites, people pulling out the racist card. Who are these right-wing groups you first mentioned? Or are you pulling out another card? So Mally Bites says you're potentially guilty of the same thing.
Who do they want to... What right-wing groups are we talking about?
Not 100% clear. Mally Bites, can you put another comment in and then just explain who do you... what you're referring to there, and I will read it out and I'll put it to Jade after the break. Mogden says Nicola could hide in the back of the camper van. This is about the Scottish National Party. Yeah, touchy subject for Nicola and Peter, I think. Mingalinga Ding Dong says, has Nick Griffin been on yet? No, he's going to be on after in about 20 minutes after we've talked with Jada, so you haven't missed Nick Griffin yet. A lot of other comments here. Hemingway says that a lot of migrants were asked, economic migrants were awaiting approval for their asylum claims in a dialogue in Liverpool. Don't know much about that. I'm only glossing over it because I don't know much about it. That's all. They think they are immune, Jada. They are not, says Holly. And just one more. I totally agree. And women, Jada, pubs were key, totally ruined my social life for many others, says Holly. I probably haven't read that right, Holly. Apologies. Oh, right. Malibai says, Jada mentioned right-wing groups at the beginning, but didn't say who she meant. Did you mention right-wing groups?
I think I mentioned the right-wing groups in the context of focusing on one issue, which is Islam, right? Let's just be very clear. So they would be the groups that I was involved with before. So I think that's, this is the context in which I said this. So I can't imagine. So briefly, I had a look around the English Defence League and very quickly decided that that wasn't for me. And then, of course, as most people know, I joined Britain First, became the deputy leader, and then left Britain First and created the British Freedom Party. I haven't insinuated that any of them are racist, by the way. I think this racist label, in fact, if anything, I'd say that my views are much harsher than theirs. So if anyone's going to be labelled a racist, it would be far more appropriate for me. But there we go.
Okay. Well, Nicola Sturden would agree. And Nicola, if you are watching, if you have time at the moment, maybe you're with Peter at the moment, but if you have got time, do call in to today's News Talk TNT. I'd love to give you the right to reply with what Jada's saying. You can find the number on our website. We're going to carry on with Jada right up to the top of the hour, after which we have Nick Griffin, a debate I've wanted to have for 18 years. And finally, we're having it here on today's News Talk. I'll see you in a minute.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Right, I've got cancer. I've been trying to tell the rest of you, but no one's listening. And I don't just mean you, ears, eyes. Would you look in the damn toilet for once? Hands, roll those sleeves and take a sample. And legs, trot off to the doctor to get me looked at. Because bowel cancer can be successfully treated when detected early. Now look who's finally woken up.
You're with Lembit Opik on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembit Opik show here on today's News Talk TNT. I'm still with Jada Franson, who's leader of the British Freedom Party. Coming up in about a quarter of an hour, we have Nick Griffin, former leader of the British National Party, to have a debate he and I have been trying to have for 18 years. Finally happening here on today's News Talk TNT. It's the debate that you weren't allowed to hear if you happen to be watching Question Time on the state-sponsored, tax-paid-for TV station in the UK, which just became a shouting match against Nick Griffin. Here, we're going to have a dialogue so that you can make up your own mind about the gentleman and his views as well, because that's what free speech is about. I hope that you'll find it interesting, and I hope that there'll be some dialogue in the mainstream media about it afterwards. A real debate about real subjects where I don't patronise you by telling you what you should think, but instead giving you first-hand opportunity to hear the account from Nick Griffin, one of the more controversial individuals, as is Jada Franson. You're a controversial individual, I would say. Do you see yourself as a controversial individual?
Not particularly. I actually genuinely don't believe that my views are that unusual. I mean, I do acknowledge that I have an extremist nature, as in anything I do take it to the extreme, whether that be you know, my sort of political beliefs or my activism, my faith. You know, occasionally, it's in the past, even a drinking session. I do have a nature that's kind of all in, right? I'm all in, because I don't believe in just dipping your toe in. Like, let's do it. If you believe in something, then throw yourself into it. But I think that actually in the last 10 years, especially in the last five, we've seen such a shift. Things that I was jailed for saying, people are now saying on GB News, for goodness sake, the you know, this mess of a platform that was supposed to be the kind of hardline right wing. So, I think I was just being targeted because it suited them to target me at the time. But now everything I was saying has kind of happened and it's been accepted. And now to speak about it is fine. It's mainstream. So,
I might be accused. People probably will accuse me of giving you a platform. How dare I do it? How do you respond to those who, and I know you've heard this argument, I know the answer I give, but I want to hear your answer, that I shouldn't be giving the oxygen publicity to extremists like you?
Yeah, I think that what an absolutely dull world this would be, or it's becoming, when we just shut people down because we don't agree with their opinion. I think there has to be limits. I think if I was on here using foul language, using, you know, saying stuff that was illegal or you know, extremely offensive, unnecessarily offensive, then there has to be kind of, you know, you have to personally decide what your limit is. I kind of do this with my social media, right? So I say with my social media, I'm on Twitter. I was banned for 6.5 years. They let me back on. I was like, what is this place? So I've kind of got these new rules whereby I'll only block someone if they're like really, really harassing and offensive and it's just like, I don't need, you know, shallow kind of nonsense. But if someone's got a difference of opinion, I'm open to it. Like, let's have this exchange that we wouldn't have if we didn't live in a free society. Like, I thought that the sacrifice of millions of our men who fought, bled and died for our freedom was just so that we could exercise this. And so I think that this has been something, again, that's been stripped away from us. It used to be part of our education system that we used to actually engage in debate, like they still do in the United States. But that's been taken out of the education system now. And it wasn't even around when I was at school. There wasn't debating as such, not certainly in state schools. And I think it's a skill that we've lost. And we see this when we see these people screaming at each other on the street because they can't agree. It's okay to not agree on everything. Just be respectful.
There's a comment here. Malibites, I apologize. I probably made a bit of a mess of your question, but Malibites, you've bailed me out. Let me just read what Malibites says. I was just curious, as the voice of Wales, which Malibites is involved with, the voice of Wales, we have been called racist and far right and so forth. So I was just wondering what groups you meant. At the end of the day, if you know, you know. So thanks, Malibites. You've been very generous in your forgiveness there. I'll try harder next time. A few other comments here. Malibites adds, Lembit, I hope you realize I haven't gone to the woods yet and must admit I'm on my garden with the pooch listening. Thank you, Malibites. Another 70 minutes to go. I think you should listen all day, but definitely don't miss Nick Griffin. It's a piece of history coming up today, brought to you thanks to TNT's genuine commitment to freedom of expression. And that leads me to the next question, Jada, and it's a slightly philosophical one, but it's very relevant. Tim Scott attended the Conservative conference in Brussels, which the socialist mayor tried to shut down and therefore gave them world coverage. Why do you think that those types of people like the socialist mayor, who then drew the ire of the prime minister of Belgium, why do you think they regarded it as a successful or effective strategy to try to silence their opponents when, certainly in that case, it backfired spectacularly?
Okay, so I'll give you a broad answer, but before I do, I will say that I actually am of the belief that a lot of these events are orchestrated and they are some form of a psyop, really, to cast even more attention onto them. So I'll just throw that out there first and foremost. However, it is worth noting that, particularly on the left, which is meant to be, the left were always kind of pitching themselves as the people that were liberal, right? That was the point. But I found that is the absolute opposite. And this actually can be directly applied to like tactics used against left wing, right wing, what have you, conservative and liberal, for example. There seems to be this kind of this tactic. This has been like common purpose style. Attack your opponent, shout them down, accuse them of something they're not doing. You know, like when you're told, calm down, why are you shouting? You're not shouting, but these are the tactics they've been told to use against you when you're trying to debate with them. And so that's been used very effectively against, say, conservatives. I don't mean conservatives, small c, I don't mean the party, but and I've seen actually also in America, there seems to be this kind of turn the other cheek mentality on the right wing or the conservative movement, where people are like, I'm not going to engage in those same tactics. I'm not going to lower myself to engage in cancel culture tactics because I don't believe in that. But what that translates to is they're not going to stop, right? So they will use the cancel culture against us. We will then say, well, I'm turning the other cheek because this is disgusting. And that's why it's so important that we have platforms like this, where you can have people looking at the camera, screaming at the camera, saying, I despise this woman and everything she stands for, but I respect her right to have a platform, like not be completely silenced and dehumanized for saying something that actually millions of people do agree with, but also millions don't.
The thing I learned when I studied philosophy at the University of Bristol, which was a great philosophy department, because the study of philosophy is not, well, you do learn a body of thought, but it teaches you how to think. And I think what I learned there was to understand that the most interesting conversations are often with people who have a different view, because otherwise you're living in an echo chamber which simply repeats what you already believe. And a lot of people do that, of course, and it's easy with social media just to have reaffirmation after reaffirmation. It seems to me also, Jada, that you said it yourself, something of a reactionary. You tend to take things to a logical conclusion, and that gets you into hot water. Would it not be easier for you to accept that you're not going to make great progress, you're endlessly going to be on the outside, and just go and get a nice job, cushy number, £100,000 a year, and just go with the flow, because you're not going to change much anyway?
Definitely. It would be so much easier. But I would rather die. Genuinely, I would rather die. I mean, I'm also, I'm so dedicated to my activism, my beliefs, all of my principles are faith driven. And I have been on a bit of a journey, even in my own faith in more recent years. And I've also matured. When I came onto the political scene, I was in my kind of mid-20s, charging around in a flat cap with a cross. And, you know, people remember that stuff and they remember. But everybody's on a journey, I think. But the one thing that's never changed on my journey is that is the genuinely held beliefs that I have around all of these issues. So, for example, the activism that I've engaged in that's got me in so much trouble. As I say, I've lost jobs, I've lost friends, relatives, I lost my home, I lost my liberty, they jailed me, they took my assets, I lost everything. I mean, they took everything from me. But I knew deep down that I was doing this out of a genuine love and concern for my people. And we always say in the British Freedom Party, you know, true nationalism is born out of a love for one's people, not hatred of others, you know. So I understand that I could just put my head down, pretend all of this stuff isn't happening, stop caring about the greater good, and I'd probably personally benefit. But my goodness, would my soul be damaged forevermore? And I couldn't imagine it. I'd rather die, honestly.
Strong statements, and that leads me to time goes so fast, but it leads me to ask you a direct question about, if you were the Home Secretary, what would be your migration policy? I'll talk with Nick Griffin about that in more detail a bit later on, but if you were able to define the United Kingdom's migration policy, what would it be?
Oh gosh, where would I start? Well, I mean, I suppose we have to deal with this in the reverse, because we've got so many people here that shouldn't be here. You know, deport everyone, every foreign criminal, there's a good start. I scrapped the welfare state as well. So it's not appealing for people to come here. And also it encourages our people to get off of their backsides, respectfully. And then if there needed to be any, I'm not a fan of immigration at all, really. I'm not. But if there needed to be any form of immigration, I think it would need to be on a very, very strict, stringent points-based system of absolute necessity, and not necessarily... of absolute necessity. I don't think we need immigration. I honestly believe that it's one of the things, not the only thing, but it's one of the things that's completely destroying us and destroying our culture. But yeah, I mean, we're in so deep, and demographics don't lie. There is no way to reverse the situation in the United Kingdom. The indigenous white British population are going to become a minority, not the smallest, but a minority in this country in the coming years. And that can't be reversed. And so dealing with migration is one thing, but dealing with the globalist cultural Marxist agenda of, you know, the LGBT agenda, which again stops reproduction, abortion, all of these things need to be dealt with before we can, because we're not reproducing, right? So we took all the immigrants away. We still haven't got enough people. We're an aging society who aren't breeding. We're well below replacement level. So it's such a huge issue. I don't see anyone in this government or the next tackling that, I have to say.
You may not have a candidate from your own party in your area. Have you got a view on who you would vote for if the election was tomorrow, or are you going to abstain?
I won't be voting. These are some of the leaflets that we've been giving out in the elections, and we basically say if voting changed anything, the tyrants would ban it. And on this, we've got a QR code that people can scan on the back, and we encourage them to either abstain altogether or spoil their ballot paper. And then instead of voting and wasting your vote on these people that absolutely don't care about you and they're going to promise you the world and deliver none of it, we give people real tangible ways to help themselves, like cancelling their TV licence lawfully, pulling their children out of these sex education classes, educating people on the vaccine, providing exempt cards for the vaccine and the masks. And talk to people about a cashless society and how, you know, we have to keep using cash. These are the ways that people can help themselves. It might seem like tiny steps, but everybody can do something. No one can do everything, everyone can do something. Voting will change nothing at all.
You got a 10-second reply to this question. Mally Bites, this is payback because Mally Bites forgave me for messing up his earlier question.
Okay.
Jada, what would you do to support us veterans, especially ones like myself with severe health issues due to service?
Oh, everything I possibly could. These are the people that deserve the welfare. There's a very tiny portion of people that deserve it. Housing, you know, whatever healthcare you need, prioritised. We don't do enough to look after our veterans, and they deserve we owe everything to them. So to the person that asked the question, you know, you should get whatever you need, and God bless you and thank you for your service.
And Geordie Jane says it's great to chat with Jada. So thank you so much. Really interesting. Definitely have you back, and really grateful. And I hope you found this useful and a genuine forum for free speech.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure being here.
Give my regards to Northern Ireland and the Royal Belfast Academical Institution. I'm going to discriminate now. It's the best school in Europe because I went there. Really appreciate your time, Jada. And I hope the rain stops long enough for you to get a walk. That is Jada Franson. Coming up next, we've got Nick Griffin. Since 2006, I've wanted to have the debate we're going to have next, but it's always been stopped, shut down by the councillors. Well, they can't stop us this time. In a few minutes' time, Nick Griffin, former leader of the British National Party, will join me for an hour of views and comments. This is the Lembotopic Show. This is the home of free speech. It's today's news talk, TNT. I'll see you in a few minutes.